This is the original DJ Rear. Big up our listeners, you know, listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in stereo.
Spring Into Action, Outrage is happening March 11th through 24th. Spring Into Action is an annual event series that is organized and funded by QPIRG McGill and SSMU. Every spring, QPIRG organizes a week of free workshops, discussions, film screenings, and social events engaging local and global issues. We have an exciting lineup of events, including a screen printing workshop, community dinner and zine making night, Prison Abolition 101, and other practical and capacity building workshops for organizing in the midst of injustice and anger. Check out the schedule of events at QPIRGMcGill.org or on our Instagram at QPIRGMcGill.
This is CKUT 90.3 FM, and welcome to Older Women Live for March 2024, our International Women's Day show. We're on the air once a month, bringing you radio from a feminist perspective. I'm Rosemary Wally, and I've been very ably assisted by Laura Yaris, who's edited the different pieces. Today, we're going to hear voices from the Women's March here in Montreal on the 8th of March, last Friday, as well as from some of those who gathered in Ottawa on the 9th of March, demanding a ceasefire and an end to the terrible genocide in Gaza. We also have an interview with Jenny Law Sully, a member of Solidarité Québec Haïti, who tells us what is really happening in Haiti. I went down to Dorchester Square on Friday to the Women's March, and that's where I met Sadika Siddiqui. We've known each other for years, Sadika and I. Sadika worked at the South Asian Women's Center for the longest time and has now retired. It was a great march. The women were feisty and noisy, and there were a lot of them as well. Obviously, they were, for the most part, much younger than I am, than Sadika and I. But we managed to meet up and talk.
What's your wish for International Women's Day this year?
Actually, this year, the things that are bothering me,
the war.
Because war is not just affecting the countries. For me, is war is affecting the women's life, children's life. So for me, is that this is Women's Day. We call it Working Women's Day. But that this should be, we are talking about that, why this imperialism, what this war have affecting the women. You know, their livelihood has been taken away. They are on the street. So that's what we are saying.
You mean the women of Palestine?
Women in Palestine, women in Haiti, women everywhere. You look around and you see, hear the news, everywhere, somewhere the war is going on. And these wars are affecting women and children, especially women. They are the one, they are taking care of the family there. And they are, you know, that their livelihood has been taken away because of that. So that is my, this thing, this year, my main concern is that the woman, how we reduce this woman suffering. You know? So that is, this whole thing is for women's safety.
So how do you think we can reduce the suffering?
We have to stop our governments to support these wars, not supporting. They are giving them money, they are giving them, you know, war the heads and everything. So that's why we have to talk to our government. We have to ask our government not to support war. And maybe for them it's a power, but for us it's destroying everybody, destroying the countries. I'm looking at Ukraine and I'm looking at the destruction in Palestine, Gaza especially, but what is going on there? So what we need to do is we need to fight with our government. We need to take the power to tell government, stop supporting the war, stop the war. And they are the one they can stop the war.
Yeah, because they're selling arms to everybody.
Everybody.
Our Canadian government.
Those are the ones that are making the war.
On Saturday, there was a big march in Ottawa demanding a ceasefire in Gaza and an end to the genocide. Unfortunately, the rain came down, but there were lots of people, mostly young. I met two women from Wakefield, Quebec. Ilsa Turnson and a woman called Joanne, whose last name I didn't catch.
So, what's your name first?
My name is Ilsa Turnson.
Kirsten.
Turnson.
Kirsten. Okay, Ilsa. So, I mean, it's silly to say this, but why did you come today? Why are you involved in this struggle?
Well, I guess the first and foremost is the joining the voice for absolutely condemning our any association that Canada has with what's going on in Gaza. And also, I guess, as somebody deeply concerned about the life of the planet, I think that war has never been and is not acceptable. And I will continue to stand up and say that as long as I'm alive and beyond.
Okay, so how long have you been involved in your anti-war struggle in general?
Since the Vietnam War in the United States.
Okay. So you would have been involved near the beginning of the women's movement becoming popular.
Yes. I was part of that transition generation, I guess.
I guess you were.
So what do you think of the issues that we get dealt with and the progress that we've made?
As women? Well, I think it can be deceptive to think that we have, that the struggle is over.
Right on, sister.
Yeah. But I think the women's movement is becoming more and more intersectional and acknowledging that we are part of a much broader movement in terms of racialized minorities and our indigenous sisters. So I think the women's movement is a deep, ongoing struggle for the whole tendency, evolutionary-wise, historically-wise, that domination is not acceptable. Domination over women, domination over fragile environments, including human environments.
So you must be happy with the fact that people are in the streets.
Absolutely. And continue to be in the streets, unafraid, and boldly stating what we all know in our hearts, that this cannot go on.
You're her friend, huh?
We've just met, actually.
We just met. But we live in the same community.
So what's your name?
My name is Joanne.
Joanne. So do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I agree, though, that probably the world will continue to evolve hopefully in the direction of engaging women further, and racialized women around the world are going to take over the world, and once they're in charge, we will have a much better world overall.
But what about all the nuclear weapons, Joanne?
Damn scary.
Yeah, it is very, very scary. We should shut them down, yeah, all those nuclear wars. How to do that, I don't know.
And what about the media? I find that the media whips up this whole nuclear issue. You know, we're not spending enough on armaments.
Yes, and that's current right now in Canadian government, right? So what's that going to mean?
The equating of safety with arms is so pathetic that it brings me to my knees in sorrow.
So do either of you have a message for the young people?
Come and join us. It's our time. Together we can make a big difference. Do not feel afraid. Do not become cynical. Realize the creative power of solidarity in standing up for freedom and equality.
Take charge, my friend, my female friends out there. Let's just do what we need to do. We got to be out there. We got to be vocal. We got to fight.
Thank you very much.
Un socio como les autres. This song is so closely associated with the second wave of feminism. The title means a witch like all others, and it was originally sung by this French singer Anne Sylvestre probably in the 70s. But then our very own Pauline Julien sang it with such emotion. It's a long song that describes the life that every woman has. Near the beginning, it says that when you go to war, I stay home, and my prayers become my prison bars. It's very poetic, this song. And when the bombs drop, I scream for you. And this will be true of all the women who are living through war everywhere, whether it's in Djibouti or the Ukraine or Ethiopia or Gaza, of course. Those women that lose their children, this is the worst thing. So the song is, once again, Un socio como les autres. sung this time by Pauline Julien. An interview with Jenny Law Sully, a member of Solidarity Quebec Haiti, who tells us what is really happening in Haiti. Our biased media leads us to believe that Port-au-Prince is full of, the capital of Haiti, is full of people who are just running around in chaos, just enjoying firing guns. But that's not quite the case. And here's Jenny Law Sully to explain. We are seeing all kinds of stuff in the media about your country of Haiti and how it's just gangs and guns. And can you tell us what's really happening?
Thank you for that question. I think that's the good question to ask. What is really happening?
What is really happening?
Yes, because obviously the media is portraying the situation in a certain way that I would tend to call biased, in a biased way. Even the use of the word gangs, it's a term that has some racist undertones. They're talking about gangs in Haiti, but what we're seeing is that the people that are terrorizing the population and that have been doing this for a while now are a lot of them are ex-policemen or ex-military. So I think the term militia or paramilitary would be more appropriate to describe those armed groups in Haiti. A lot of them have links to the local oligarchs in Haiti, and their weapons, they come from Florida. There are no weapons manufacturing facilities in Haiti. You know, the weapons are not being produced in Haiti. They're coming from the United States. So those who end up getting those weapons are organized. So that's what I would call a militia, you know. And to use the word gang, it really obscures what's going on. It sounds like, these are like street gangs, like there are street gangs in Montreal or New York, and they're competing for territory or to control drugs or stuff like that. But in Haiti, really, it's not like these groups, these armed groups are trying to control a territory or to sell drugs. They do all kinds of criminal activities. Of course, it could involve drugs and stuff like that. But what we have found is that the activities, the criminal activities of these gangs really started being intensified in 2018 and 2019. Following the massive protests that were organized against the price hike for the, how do you say that in English again? The
staples, the rice and oil and these.
Yeah, the rise of oil. Yeah, people couldn't buy oil because there's always electricity problems in Haiti. So oil is being used to light their homes, for cooking, for transportation. So oil is very important. And whenever there's a price hike of oil, it affects people. It's really a big problem, a major problem. And the price hike was done because the International Monetary Fund insisted that the government raise the price. So this started like massive protests, and people were protesting against corruption, and they weren't just protesting against the government, they were protesting against the whole system, like the fact that Haiti, ever since the earthquake, was being run by foreign embassies, and these embassies have interest like in the mining sector, and they were involved in all sorts of corruption with the government. So this was really different in the type of protesting that were being organized was different, because previously people would protest the president and ask for him to be replaced by another one. But it starting 2018 and 2019, people were saying, we need a new political system. We need things to change. We need the corruption to stop. We don't want to replace this person with that person. We want the system to change. And that's when the local oligarchs, like those, a few families, maybe 15 families, I think they got scared. And they started to really organize, to get like organized armed groups to protect them, their interests, first of all. And to sort of break the protest, because when those gangs started just shooting in the street and burning people's houses down, the protests gradually started to be less and less massive. One thing we need to keep in mind, like the those so-called gangs are militias that were used to stop people from protesting and asking for a new system. And it seems that it's not just the local oligarchs that are organizing like the weapons distribution. There are, from what people are saying, there seems to be an involvement of the United States.
Yes, I think we should talk about that. I mean, Haiti was the first country to overthrow slavery in 1804, I know. So this is a very resilient people.
Yes, absolutely. It's important to bring up slavery, because if there's one thing that seems to be linked, like if we can link what's going on now to the past, there seems to be like a political intention to keep the descendants of slaves, to keep them down, basically. And to have some sort of slavery by another name, you know, disguised slavery, still in place in Haiti. And we've seen that after the earthquake, and we've seen that also after the PHTK, which is the party that has been ruling ever since the earthquake. We've seen that what they are trying to do is get people to not be self-sufficient on their land. They're stopping people from doing agriculture to sustain themselves, and they're trying to get them to be in sweatshops, basically, and trying to sign contracts with those international companies or companies that have links to either the USA or Canada or France. And basically, when people work in those sweatshops in Haiti, they barely make enough money to pay for their food. So it's some sort of semi-slavery or a different form of slavery that they're trying to keep going. They want that system of slavery or something resembling slave labor to go on in Haiti. And that seems to be the plan that the U.S. has had for Haiti all along, ever since they invaded Haiti in 1915. A lot of people forget that the Marines actually invaded Haiti in 1915 and have been interfering in Haiti's government ever since. And that, yeah, they seem to be determined to have some sort of system where the people will be working in sweatshops or and not getting like the possibility to raise the minimum wage. There have been information that came out in WikiLeaks a few years back that proved that the U.S. embassy was involved in preventing the minimum wage going up in Haiti. So, yes, I think there's a lot of what's going on that has to do with the fact that they don't want the system to change. They're trying to stop people protesting to get better living conditions. And the local oligarchs, really, they have friends in the U.S. embassy. They have friends in the Canadian embassy. And everyone seems to be looking out for the interest of those imperialist countries, but no one is looking out for the interest of the Haitian people.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because when you see the pictures, it's always these young men with guns running around. And so it's you just get the impression that the people are totally chaotic and have no idea what they're doing. But in fact, when you trace it back, you are tracing back to the US, to France, and of course to Canada. Can you give us a couple of examples of Canadian companies? I know that the Gildan, the T-shirt manufacturer that was up here in Montreal for years and years and years on Mount Royal Avenue and then took off and went to Haiti. Are there other examples?
Yes, Gildan has been involved in keeping that sweatshop, those sweatshop agreements going in Haiti and in other places in Latin America and the Caribbeans. We know that there are mining companies, Canadian mining companies, that have been trying to keep the PHTK party in government. Well, they've been in touch with them because it's important for them to have like those exploration permits. And the PHTK has been very willing to give hand out those permits to Canadian mining companies. So I know that there was Newmont Mining Company, but they changed their name. That's the other thing also, to keep track of them is sometimes difficult because they keep changing their names. There are companies that are interested in Haiti's gold. There's cobalt in Haiti. There's all sorts of different minerals. And people very often don't know about that. Very often I'm asked, well, you keep saying that like the imperialists are keeping Haiti down, but what's in Haiti? What's there? People have this idea, this is just a poor country and they have, they can't govern themselves and there's nothing there. But actually, there are a lot of minerals in Haiti and there are ports to that effect. And it's important to keep that in mind to understand why these Canadian mining companies want to have a government that is more interested in making deals with them than they would be interested in developing an education system or a healthcare system. You know, they want a government that will prioritize their commercial interests, you know, and let them do those explorations. And very often what they'll do is they will want to get the people off the land, because if there are people that are trying to, you know, do some agriculture and grow their food and make sure that their community has enough to eat, but it just so happens that they're close to where those big companies want to do a mining project, then they need a government in place that won't hesitate to repress those people, get those people out of there. And that's why they want to have a party like the PHTK, which is very corrupt. It was first headed by Michel Martelly. And then there was Jovenel Moïse. Jovenel Moïse ended up being assassinated. There's been all sorts of speculation and a so-called investigation that was done. But it seems that the PHTK are fighting amongst themselves for power. So it's probably another member of the PHTK that assassinated Jovenel Moïse. And then we ended up with Ariel Henry, who was not even chosen in terms of how the political system works in Haiti. Like, the fact that he's called a prime minister is not even correct, because there was no one from the Senate that approved him, no one from the parliament that approved him. And so Ariel Henry has been running Haiti for the past 3 or 4 years. And basically people are saying it's the core group that appointed him to, you know, to office. The core group is Canada, US, and the French embassy. They call themselves the core group. They've been there ever since the earthquake, supposedly to help Haiti.
That was in 2010, right?
Yes, since 2010, the core group started organizing itself. So this is really, really neo-colonialism. I think the fact that you have those foreign embassies who get together and talk about how things are going to work with the government, who should be prime minister or not. So it's very clear. If you go on Twitter, there is a tweet from the core group after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, a tweet saying that Ariel Henry should be the interim president, just with no respect at all for the constitution of Haiti or what, no respect for democracy whatsoever. So Ariel Henry really shouldn't be there at all, and now he isn't there.
Yes, because he can't get back. Can we just go back to something you were saying about the mining? I think it's important that people understand that Canada is the number one country in the world for mining. We've got all these satellites going everywhere. And apparently the law, I mean, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but the law says that if you, you know, in your satellite, you happen to see some gold sort of far down on the earth, you are allowed to go down and get it. So somebody actually can come into my garden, you know, if they see gold from there, whatever, and without asking me or anything like that, they can just take it. If it's more than 18 inches from the surface or something, there's some rule like that. But this is why there are all these Canadian mining companies in Haiti wrecking it. And as you say, the people are not allowed to grow food on their own land.
Yes, it's good that you bring that up. I think the Canadian mining laws is something like Canadian citizens need to look into a lot more, not just in terms of helping Haiti, but in terms of our own rules and our own politics. We need to look at them more closely. I must admit that that's something I've been wanting to do. And I think it's important to get in touch with other Canadian activists who have been like criticizing the Canadian mining industry in general, not just in regards to Haiti, but in general, what the Canadian mining industry is doing in Africa or elsewhere in the world, or even here. We need to look into that a lot more closely.
So you were saying that there's gold, and what else is there in Haiti that they want?
Yes, gold. There's this mineral called cobalt.
That's for cell phones, I think.
Yes, I think that's for cell phone and for other, you know, for other things that have something to do with planes and stuff like that. There's plenty of minerals that have importance in terms of industrial capabilities that are in Haiti.
Say nothing of military implications or...
There are military implications, absolutely, also. Yes, definitely. So that's one thing that we need to keep in mind. We also need to keep in mind that geopolitically speaking, Haiti, where it's situated, not far from the Panama Canal, it also has a strategic importance for the United States. And they've always been afraid, ever since Cuba successfully got them out, ever since Cuba did their revolution. And they've been afraid that there might be a socialist uprising in the whole region. So for them, it's very important to make sure that that doesn't happen. And they're very afraid that it might come from Haiti. So there's all that that's going on also in terms of the U.S. involvement with Haiti. And when they're talking about helping Haiti and bringing democracy to Haiti, they get involved in the organization of elections, and they spend millions of dollars on Haiti's elections. And that in itself is a problem, because you've got the millions of dollars coming from the United States, millions of dollars coming from Canada to finance the elections. And what that creates is a situation where the people who work in the organization of those elections feel that they're accountable to their foreign donors. They don't feel like their job is to make sure that the elections are well organized, are really democratic. It's not what happens. Basically, it's foreign interference in the elections of Haiti. And it has been proven that election results were changed to satisfy what the foreign embassies, what the U.S. embassy wanted to see as results in the elections. So one of the things that we need to make sure doesn't happen again as Canadians is that our tax dollars doesn't go to funding fraudulent elections. And that's what Canadian dollars have been used for in Haiti. When they're saying we're going to help Haiti, well, it shouldn't be to organize elections. I think it's a form of interference in the democratic process in Haiti. And that really, really needs to stop. We need to make sure that as Canadian citizens, one of the things that we demand from our government is that you do not fund elections in Haiti because they end up being fraudulent every time. And we've had several examples. So that needs to stop.
And so we should be calling our members of parliament and saying that we don't want this to happen. Now, they're talking now about bringing in people from Kenya and all this business of trying to control. These are different ways of controlling the local population, who, of course, is terribly poor, hungry, starving, etc. What's the latest on this?
Yes, so it's been quite an adventure for Ariel Henry, because I think like last week he went to Kenya and the idea was that he was going to sign an agreement with the president of Kenya, who's William Ruto from Kenya. And this was suggested by the core group, the U.S. Embassy. They had suggested that someone from Kenya should be part of a stabilizing mission in Haiti, that it should be police officers or soldiers from Kenya. That was their suggestion. And this was like the courts in Kenya said that in terms of the constitution in Kenya, they couldn't send soldiers to Haiti. They couldn't send police officers to Haiti unless they had like some sort of mutual agreement country to country. And that's why Ariel Henry had gone to Kenya. He was trying to create the conditions to allow for the Kenyan government to send those police officers to Haiti. And they ended up signing an agreement. But the thing is, Ariel Henry, like I said, he's not constitutionally recognized as having the right to do this. So the agreement is illegal. And anyways, he signed that agreement and he was supposed to come back to Haiti. And what happened was that before he could land, the armed militias started shooting in Port-au-Prince. They started shooting in the airport, so his plane could not land. And basically, he hasn't been back in Haiti for the past week now. It's been almost a week since he's been in Kenya. His plane ended up stopping in Puerto Rico, and we're not sure exactly what's going to happen with him, but he was not able to go back to Haiti. Now, it seems that the militias that are terrorizing the people of Port-au-Prince and terrorizing others in Haiti are trying to replace him. That's the thing. They want to put themselves in a position where possibly Guy Philly, which is a guy who was involved in the coup in 2004 against the last democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, in 2004. So Guy Philippe is trying to have power. And there's this other guy called Jimmy Cherizier, who's also one of those armed people that are terrorizing the Haitian people. And he would like to replace Ariel Henry. So that's what's going on right now.
Well, we can only feel so sorry for the ordinary people who are trying to live their lives, you know, get their kids ready for school and everything. Are there any schools operating? What about people going to work? What about public transport? What about markets? Are all these things up and running or not, given the situation in Haiti, which is so terrible?
Yeah, we've heard that schools were closed, a lot of businesses were closed. That's mainly in Port-au-Prince. I've been getting feedback that if you're far away enough from Port-au-Prince, things can be relatively normal. A lot of people are still able to go to school and to work if you're not too close to Port-au-Prince, but it varies a lot depending on what region in Haiti. So yeah, we need to keep monitoring the situation. You know, I'm a member of Solidarité Québec Haïti. We're in contact with people in Haiti on a regular basis. We're getting their feedback on what's happening. So we've been getting different comments on the situation depending on where people are.
If we want to keep up with Solidarité Québec Haiti, you must have a website that you can give us.
Yes, we do have a website. You can find us solidaritequebechaiti.org. We are also on Facebook. You can go there and get in touch with us. It'll be our pleasure to tell you more about the situation and to tell you how you can get involved and how you can work to change the policies of Canada towards Haiti. That's something we think we need to do, is organize international solidarity with Haiti. That's really what's missing right now. We don't need to have another foreign intervention. We need people to be in solidarity with Haiti by asking their government to stop interfering in Haiti's affairs. That's really it.
Yeah, well, I think that now that people have been getting out and getting involved in the terrible genocide in Palestine, they're now looking maybe more closely at their own governments and realizing that, well, you see, we know that we're providing arms for Israel or whatever. And people are beginning to look maybe more at where they live, their own communities, that there is stuff that we absolutely need to do.
Yes. I think people are more aware, and with what's going on in Gaza, that, you know, that we have governments that are basically contributing or being complicit in this genocide, and the weapons, you know, the letting those weapons get to those who are committing genocide, that's a big part of the problem. So, yes, I think we need to be very vocal about the fact that we don't want this done in our names, that our government should not be complicit in genocide. They should not be complicit in foreign military interventions in Haiti, in Gaza, or anywhere else in the world. We, as citizens that are aware of what's going on, need to be more vocal.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny Law, for your time and for really filling us in on what's happening with Haiti, because we get no serious information. So when you hear the next time people hear, you know, gangs in Haiti, well, you may as well just switch off, because that is not really totally what is happening in Haiti at all. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Papa n'a fait quoi la vie pile. Dis-moi, c'est quoi qu'on le veut tomber? Songez nous pas qu'un les choix font avancer. La peine tirée, balayer ou zénatrier pour nous en arriver. Tout ça nous sortit dans l'amour. Sunday. cachê, você manche tudo no DG. Vê, en ville, j'ai calé à chercher. En route pour profiter, l'on divise. En clôturé, en revoisé, bien vous visite, nous jouer demain. Tout ça que sorti dans l'amour.
Sadly, we're out of time, so please stay tuned for our next show on CKUT at 90.3 FM, which is Harbinger Showcase. Thank you.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you. The woman in your life knows simply what is true. She knows a simple way to touch, to make you whole now. The woman in your life, she can touch. Your struggles in the world. Who cares more to bless your weary shoulders than the woman in your life as she's trying to come through? A woman's voice with messages, a woman's feelings. She can feel. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
If it sounds like Montreal, it sounds like CKUT. CKUT's annual funding drive is back, and this year we're celebrating the city that made us. From Friday, March 15th to Sunday, March 24th, tune in for an earful of Montreal-made magic. Your favorite programmers will be live in studio and live streaming online for the first time ever. Tune in online, on the good old-fashioned radio, or join us in person. CKUT friends and family will be providing the tunes for an opening party at Bar La Marche à Côté on March 14th and a closing night on March 23rd at Nouvel Établissement. Stay tuned at our website for other events that put the fun in fundraising. Don't miss these celebrations of community radio and sounds of the city from your favorite local DJs. We need $50,000 to keep CKUT on the map. Powering a nonprofit radio station is more expensive than ever. Will you answer the call of your community before it's too late? Donate now by visiting ckut.ca/donate or by calling 514-907-9424. CKUT 90.3 FM, the sound of Montreal since 1987.
Hi, blessed love. This is Jimmy Cliff, and you're listening to CKUT Radio. Stay tuned.